All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. Our next guest is James Bovard. Jim Bovard, same difference. JimBovard.com, and especially JimBovard.com/blog is the website. And he wrote the books, The Farm Fiasco, The Fair Trade Fraud, Feeling Your Pain, Freedom in Chains, and I'm trying to remember more from the Clinton years. I know there's more. I can't remember them all. And then, of course, the Bush betrayal and terrorism and tyranny, then the Bush betrayal, and then attention deficit democracy, which if you haven't read Attention Deficit Democracy, tell someone that you love to get it for you for Christmas because it's really good. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
I really mean that, too. I really dug that book, man. That was great work.
Hey, well, thanks. Hey, you know, Scott, it's funny, you know, to be hearing the ads before the show to hear Ernie Hancock doing a pitch for his radio show. Ernie is the one guy who makes you sound mellow.
Yeah, that's probably true. In fact, I wanted to say, too, and I completely spaced it out on the way in from the break, that I didn't get a chance to finish saying how appreciative I was of Ernie for having me at the Freedom Summit over the weekend, and how cool it was to meet Stephen Molyneux and Butler Schaefer, and I got to sit and have lunch with Butler, and that was really cool, and it was good times, man. And so I don't know when the videos are coming out, but there are a lot of really great speeches comparing America to Rome and the Soviet Union and all the corruption and people singing songs about guns, and it was awesome, man. I had a great time.
Well, the stories I've heard, Rome had better orgies.
Yeah, although I don't know, man.
But the Soviets probably had worse.
The Soviets probably had worse? Yeah, I can imagine that would be true. Yeah, definitely. America, though, I hear you're on the wrong coast, buddy.
Well, yes, that's true. That's true. I was almost spontaneous, and I said, no, this is family radio, so.
Oh, yes, yeah. No, yes, well, yeah, right. You can only go so far. All right. Well, anyway, so look, man, the thing is about Jim is even though he's really funny, he writes about really mean stuff that the government does to people all the time. He's funny about it, so tell us the big punchline about Barack Obama murdering people.
Punchline. Well, you know, I've got a story in the New American Conservative magazine on his assassination policy. How much evidence should the U.S. government be obliged to show before it kills you? None, according to the Obama administration. How much evidence should the government be obliged to possess of your wrongdoing before they target you for killing? That's a secret. And if some court makes the government answer that question, the terrorists win.
Awesome. Now, wait a minute. Is this an old MP3 that somehow got stuck back in the loop? Because it sounds like you're talking about George W. Bush, say, 5 years ago.
Well, you know, Bush had the same kind of doctrine. Bush's folks did not push it as blatantly in public. But there was testimony by the stooge who ran Office of Legal Counsel in early 2006, closed testimony on Capitol Hill, saying that that Bush could order an assassination here in the U.S. Newsweek picked up on that, and nobody else bothered to print about it because it's like, you know, it's like, well, it was classified testimony, so we shouldn't worry about it. But no, I mean, this and yet the Obama people have taken this beyond classified testimony, and now it's the law of the land according to the White House, which I guess is the ultimate authority on law as long as they keep their secrets.
Right. So now Bush, I guess you're saying there was this one bit of testimony. If they did deliberately target American citizens for murder, they try to keep it secret. Of course, there was the assassination in Yemen of a bunch of guys in a truck, and they spun it at the time that they were going after this other guy and the American. Hey, he shouldn't have been in the truck with that guy, but that's the way it goes. Although I'm trying to remember who it was on the show that was saying that maybe that was in dispute, that it really was the American that they were after there. But this kind of thing was few and far between, and yet Eli Lake had this interview with John Brennan in the Washington Times where he says there are dozens, just outright, I guess, bragging about it, where dozens of Americans on the assassination list. They're to be killed by the CIA or JSOC or whoever can get there first.
Well, did Brennan say that there were dozens on the list for killing, or did he say that there were dozens? I've forgotten the exact phrasing on that, but it was a little more nuanced than that. But no,
really?
It was,
I'll Google it up while you're talking.
But it's also possible I'm mistaken on that. So.
Well, no, I mean, I want to get it right, but I'm pretty sure that was the deal. And you know, well, here's the other thing, and I know I'm right about this, that when they talk about Anwar al-Awlaki, who's the poster boy for an American who's so al-Qaeda
right,
that we got to murder
right.
him, in the Washington Times, in the Washington Post, the sources, the anonymous government officials are telling the Washington Post, and behind the veil of anonymity, they still will not go further than to say, we believe he may have ties to terrorism.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah, there was a comment by a director of national intelligence, Dennis Blair, testified earlier this year. He said that the target to kill decisions depend on, quote, whether that American is involved in a group that is trying to attack us.
Wow.
Involved. Yeah, this is vague. This is, you know, involved. Well, you know, there's some of us got an email from them. Yep, that's him. Kill him. So.
All right. So let's see. It starts out here with. Well, I'll go back over this in the break. I mean, he does certainly start out just talking about there are dozens of American citizens that are the threat, and I think it's later in the article where he gets to, yeah, and so we're going to murder them. But really, even if we're just talking about Anwar al-Awlaki, the one guy that they've, you know, deliberately named as their poster boy for this policy, that really, in legal terms, means what? I mean,
well,
is this the same thing as you know, if they can do it to him, they can do it to you, or is it different, maybe?
Well, the thing that's important is that the Obama team, like the Bush team, thinks of the entire world as a battlefield for the world, war on terrorism, and thus the same standard would apply for killing somebody in Yemen, which the same standard could apply for Iowa or North Dakota. So, I mean, it might be more important to avoid witnesses, but. It's amazing that the media asks so little evidence when the government does do one of these whack jobs.
Well, remember when they arrested the Lackawanna Six, who were the guys who were
the
guy in Yemen's friends, actually. And Dick Cheney wanted to use the army to go and invade this New York town to arrest these guys. And apparently it was just Bush's feelings that overrode it or something.
Well, this is, you know, this is typical of how the government tries to convince us that these folks. Well, it's the same thing that some big city police departments do. They send in the SWAT team for a routine search warrant to try to convince people. Well, this is such a dangerous situation, but it's the government itself that makes it vastly more dangerous than what it is.
Yeah, well, but it's the legal precedent set. It's the the pit in the pendulum or whatever, you know, where it's on its way. It ain't quite here yet. We're not feeling it. But then I'm reading Matthew Rothschild in The Progressive over and over again. He's reporting on this Northern Command and, what is it, 3,000 hardened Iraq War veterans, active duty veterans in the Northern Command that includes the United States. And now they're saying that the Obama team is really ratifying, it seems, the policy that you wrote about all those years in the Bush years that... Oh, yeah, the president can do whatever he wants. I guess occasionally they cite the authorization to use military force, but this doesn't sound like it's based on that, really.
Well, actually, I think some of the folks, are you talking about the Northern Command or the assassination policy?
Either or. The
okay.
mixture of the two is what I'm afraid of, you understand?
Well,
but.
Yeah, but, well, you know, something which has changed as far as the concerns about the Northern Command, since the GOP took over half of Congress, I'm sure they'll do really vigorous oversight on this.
Well, it's a big government program, and we know they're against that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it is amazing how few people in the GOP give a darn about even knowing what the government's doing. I mean, it seems like most of them would certainly prefer that nobody knows what the government's doing, including themselves.
Yeah, I always prefer it when they're out of power and they can at least pretend. You know, like, we got some good things out of those Waco hearings, right? Because they were out
absolutely.
Of power at
there
the time.
Oh, absolutely. There was some good dirt.
Yeah, some good dirt. Indeed. Hey, everybody should watch all those Mike McNulty films about that if you never have. The Rules of Engagement, A New Revelation, and The FLIR Project. Just had to work that in there. We're talking with Jim Bovard. He's the author of every book that was ever written. We'll be right back. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. That was so dang quiet. I got Jim Bovard on the line. He's the author of Attention Deficit Democracy. something in there about the battered citizen syndrome. I think you're right, Jim. We just somehow get convinced that they do this to us because they love us.
Something like that. It's sort of like a bad SM joke.
Yeah, it works. Well, I looked up that Eli Lake article, and you're right. He says there are dozens of Americans on the list of bad guys around the world.
Okay.
And, yeah, we reserve the right to kill them if we feel like it, but he doesn't say that they're all on the list to be killed right now.
Well, then it's good that they're moderate.
Right, yeah. See, that's a very important distinction there.
Well, it's always reassuring that these people are using their secret power reasonably.
Yeah. Well, you know what puzzles me? Not very much, but I've known some people who, just like in years driving a cab or whatever, meeting people like this, strangers, whatever, people who really, really believe in the law. They really believe in it, and for the good reasons, for fairness and justice and process and accountability, and they really believe in it, and it seems like you would have somewhere in there would be somebody going, man, you know, guys, if we do this, there's really no going back from this, and are we sure that we're this evil or something, you know? Is there no conscience at all in that town?
Well, it's not a question of people thinking of this as evil because they are part of the U.S. government and high up in it. That means, by definition, they're a force for good.
Yeah, the inter-party members.
Well, yeah, and it's simply a question of totally unleashing the good guys to vanquish the bad guys. This is how they view it, and legal technicalities. I mean, George Bush has been tramping around the country saying that he didn't order torture because some bootlicker lawyer told him it wasn't torture, so he didn't break the law. I mean, this is the kind of lawyers that are attracted to government power, folks who are pliable, folks who are saying, yes, master, you have this power.
Right, the ones I like all work for the ACLU and the Center for Constitutional Rights and things like that.
Yeah. There's some good folks out there. But the kind of folks kind of lawyers who prosper in Washington are yes men and bootlickers. And yet it's amazing that Bush could go around the country making this, you know, bogus argument that he didn't order torture, and people will nod their head and say, well, that's good. I mean.
Well, you know, I mean, I think, looking back, kind of think about it, we're wrapping up the decade here and whatever, and it seems like Bush's biggest accomplishments are the clash of civilization with the Muslim world and pushing executive power. You know, Reagan violated the Boland Amendment and sent death squads to El Salvador, Nicaragua, and, you know, there's scandalous stuff. But it seems like Bush's legacy really is he destroyed even the pretense of law binding the president's power forever. Way worse than Nixon, and he wasn't forced to resign. There was no accountability. He got away with all of it. As John Brennan says in that interview with Eli Lake in the Washington Times, yes, we're building a lot upon a lot of great work that they did, and we're just carrying it forward now. That's their words.
Right, and the thing that's astounding is to see how many abuses that George Bush canonized, and how many perverse interpretations of the law and the Constitution, which he and his stooges got accepted by Congress and the mainstream media and were non-issues for the American public. I mean, I was from 2004 on, I was wrong as far as the torture scandal because I kept thinking that was going to spur a backlash by the American public and much of the media. Well, I was, Pollyannish on that. Instead, it turned out to be proof of George Bush and Dick Cheney's macho.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they got away. I remember listening to a right-wing radio station out of San Antonio when the Abu Ghraib photos first broke.
Uh-huh.
And the lady was saying, no, 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 this is too far. This is just wrong. Whatever. And then, within a couple of days, okay, well, it was just the guys on the night shift got carried away and whatever. And then by the time all the details came out and torture team and attention deficit democracy and all these things, that's all old news. And yeah, really, like tying people up and then beating them unmercifully, like it's okay now, I guess, you know, because they did it and they got away with it. Same thing with the wiretapping thing. The Ricin story and Lichblau story came out in the New York Times, and George Bush held a press conference the next day, and he said, yes, I'm guilty of millions of felony counts of violations of the FISA statute in 1978. What are you going to do about it? That's what I thought. And that was it.
Well, not only that, but George Bush bragged about that in his 2006 State of the Union address, and he got standing applause from the GOP members, excepting Ron Paul, of course. I don't even think
he goes to those things.
Well, okay, perhaps not, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's got better things to do, but
right.
It was so utterly craven that you had all these members of Congress giving a standing ovation for someone who trashed the Constitution,
yep.
And trashed the Fourth Amendment, and trashed any, had showed utter contempt for any limits on his own power. And yet this has happened again and again in area after area. And, it just seems as if the bullshit reflex has been lost. That folks don't recognize government political BS anymore.
Right. Yeah. And of course, Nancy Pelosi went right up there and said impeachment is off the table no matter what. Like, I guess even if he killed someone that she cared about, she still wouldn't impeach him.
Well, I mean, you know, George Bush could stand there in a televised speech and pull out a six shooter and pluck four or five members of Congress from their chairs, and people say, well, you know, thank goodness he only had one round or one six shots or whatever. So I just like, it's amazing what they'd put up with. They would, you know, there were so few members of Congress who had the gumption to challenge him on his abuses, and some of those who did got shot down because of it, like Senator Feingold.
Right. I'm talking with Jim Bovard from the Future Freedom Foundation. I forgot to say that before, so I'm saying it now, FFF.org. You think they could target Julian Assange for assassination? You think they'll go that far?
I don't know, but it's really great. You and antiwar.com have been the forefront holding up the banner for truth on this. I mean, I have been outraged by the stampede for killing the guy when all he did was expose how the U.S. government is lying and abusing Americans, the American system of the political system, and the entire world in so many ways. And if telling the truth deserves a death sentence, then there's a lot of people who should be, added to the list. But it's amazing to see there's been so little backlash in the U.S. against these calls for Assange's assassination. Or murder, actually. It's just out-and-out murder.
Yeah. Well, and in the media, too, I mean, this is their First Amendment, right? That whole, I got a press pass, man. I'm allowed through this yellow line or whatever. This is their own freedom that they're turning against. You can't get the guys on, you know, I read Glenn Greenwald had this whole thing about what Wolf Blitzer said in defense of the state and, oh no, are you going to fix the leaking fast enough and whatever? But the only thing I saw Wolf Blitzer was he was interviewing a coward hiding in a silhouette in shadow saying, yeah, Bradley Manning's gay, all right. And I'm going, man, this is all they can do. This is the WikiLeaks story. This is what they found in those documents is that Assange is a rapist and Bradley Manning is gay. And
well, the thing about that rape.
What about free speech, man?
Well, the thing about the rape thing, it looks like the Interpol was basing its half its case on a broken condom. I mean, seriously, I mean, according to what the press has said, there are two women, and the first one said she consented. But after the condom broke, she didn't want to keep going. And so that's the basis of her complaint. So I am wondering if Interpol is going to start going after anybody who had a broken condom.
That's funny, man. I don't know. Why not? I guess as long as they're publishing secrets. And, you know, the thing is to me, too, is the unreality of it. They're talking about prosecuting Assange for treason. Well, look, Assange isn't even an American. We can just stop right there. How ridiculous is that? Now they're going to pass another law designating WikiLeaks as a terrorist organization.
It's a terrorist organization because it told the truth about the U.S. government.
I really think I agree with Anthony Gregory and Raimondo and others who have said, you're either good on WikiLeaks or screw you, man. This is the dividing line if you believe in freedom or you don't. Hey, you're bad on this issue. You're with the Tories. You're on the side of the King of England. You ought to go and live with them with Benedict Arnold.
Well, and there's a lot of people who I hope leave and make that trip.
I know, me too. A lot of people. Let's see, there's 310 million something of us now, and it's probably 60 at least percent there.
Well,
you can't get people to say, wait a minute, free speech, guys. You can't even get that out of them anymore.
Well, you know, there was a point you mentioned about the press pass earlier. Keep in mind that the thing that dominates a lot of the journalist perception is that press pass is issued by the government. So,
right.
I mean, seriously, this is how they view things.
Gotta stay in that club.
You got it.
Yep. Yeah, you know, that documentary, Buying the War by Bill Moyers, he has Dan Rather saying, you don't need a memo that reminds you that these are multi-billion dollar corporations that have enormous interest in keeping DC happy because it can destroy them. Nobody needs to remind you. That's just the law. That's how it is. All right. Well, anyway, we're all out of time. Thanks very much for joining us on the show today, Jim. It was great.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
That's Jim Bovar. He's got a new one in the American Conservative Magazine.